At PNC Private Bank, we want to know what drives you. We call that your why. Once we understand it, we'll build a personalized wealth plan to help you achieve it. So tell us, what's your why? Copyright 2021, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. All rights reserved. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, November 11th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Very few bipartisan bills pass Congress these days, but the House passing the nearly $1 trillion infrastructure bill last weekend showed some things can get support from both sides. Beyond roads, bridges, and waterways, a big chunk of the package's funding is earmarked for tech industries. That could have a significant impact on connecting the country both physically and digitally. On today's show, our senior Washington correspondent Jacob Schlesinger is here to explain what's in the bill and how it could benefit tech. That's after these headlines. Researchers at Facebook warned the platform allows stolen and recycled content to flourish despite the platform's rules against plagiarism and copyright infringement. Internal documents reviewed by the Wall Street Journal show at one point in 2018, 40% of content on Facebook pages, the equivalent of profiles for businesses or organizations, was stolen or repurposed. Our tech reporter Keech Hagee says this strategy allows divisive groups to gain larger followings.
Stealing content is the number one go-to move of bad actors, by which we mean entities like the Internet Research Agency that meddled with the 2016 election from Russia, or Macedonian troll farms, or even domestic disinformation outfits. When they want to gather a big audience and quickly influence the political debate, one of the number one things they like to do is to go scrape a bunch of content from people who are authentically communicating with their communities, repurpose them, and then push things out through these pages.
In May, Facebook began reporting for the first time the number of copyright violations it identified and removed. But employees familiar with the matter say the penalties for posting unoriginal content aren't enough of a deterrent. A spokesman for Meta, Facebook's new parent company, said it's taken steps to address issues, including removing fake accounts and reducing the distribution of unoriginal news reporting. Regulatory filings show that Elon Musk sold about $1.1 billion in Tesla shares on Monday. The sale came as he exercised just over 2 million stock options that he'd received as part of his compensation package. Over the weekend, Musk polled Twitter users on whether he should sell 10% of his stake in the company and promised to abide by the results. A majority said he should sell. Monday's reported sale represents less than 1% of his Tesla shares. The Justice Department is suing Uber for charging wait time fees to passengers with physical disabilities. Wait fees kick in 2 minutes after a standard Uber arrives at a pickup location and are charged until the trip begins. The DOJ says this violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. An Uber spokesman called the lawsuit surprising and disappointing and said the company changed its policy last week to waive the fee for any rider who said they were physically disabled. A European Union court largely upheld a decision to fine Google $2.8 billion for antitrust violations. In 2017, EU competition regulators found Google's search engine broke antitrust laws by directing users to its own comparison shopping ads instead of rival services. On Wednesday, the EU's General Court upheld nearly all of that decision. A Google spokeswoman said it was too early to say whether the company would appeal again. We report that Zillow is selling 2,000 homes as it winds down its virtual home flipping venture. Sources say the investment firm Pretium Partners agreed to buy Zillow homes across 20 U.S. markets with plans to rent them out. Last week, Zillow said it was closing down its iBuying business because it couldn't accurately predict future home prices and was losing too much money. The announcement has brought investor scrutiny on other companies in the iBuying industry, including Opendoor and OfferPad, both of which went public in the past year. On Wednesday, both companies reported record revenue and said they plan to ramp up their home flipping businesses. And
sold to you out there online. Thank you.
That was the sound of the gavel coming down at Christie's auction house in London on Tuesday. The artist Beeple, who gained fame for selling digital art through non-fungible tokens or NFTs, sold his first physical artwork, a sculpture covered in LED screens called Human One, for nearly $29 million. Our reporter covering the art market, Kelly Crow, says Beeple is rattling the cages of the traditional art world.
Beeple matters because the art world is always trying to figure out where art is headed next. He's using projection mapping and skills that have traditionally been used by video gamers and concert promoters and guys who do 3D graphics, and he's applying them to the blue chip art world space. And then on top of it, you know, attaching these digital contracts called non-fungible tokens that then allow people to own those images over time. And that's just, it's a lot for the established art world to wrap its head around, but I think it's important for us, you know, to keep track of what he and the other NFT artists are doing.
Okay, coming up, broadband and charging stations for electric vehicles were left in, but some parts of the infrastructure bill that would have been good for tech were cut out. We'll have the details after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Fifth Third Bank. From expansion to reducing the risk of fraud, your business needs custom solutions to meet the specific moments you're navigating. Enter Fifth Third Bank. Fifth Third has industry experts ready to meet you with tools designed to make your business more efficient and solutions built specifically around your goals. To learn more, visit 53.com/commercial. Fifth Third Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
The roughly $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill finally passed the House last weekend, and President Biden says he'll sign it. The bill reauthorizes existing federal infrastructure programs for 5 years and pours roughly $550 billion into new projects, including ones important to various sectors of tech. Joining us to discuss what's in the bill and what happens next is our senior Washington correspondent, Jacob Schlesinger. Jake, thanks for being here.
Sure, my pleasure.
Let's start with one of the biggest gains for tech, and that's the money set aside for broadband. It's not exactly what we think of when we're thinking about traditional infrastructure. How did this end up as part of the deal, and how will the funds be spent?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And to your point, it is a turning point that broadband for the first time has been equated as traditional infrastructure with things like roads and bridges. There's been a push to expand broadband access for a long time. The pandemic really exposed both the need for high-speed broadband in the home and also the severe gaps that have existed. It also ended up in the bill, and bipartisan consensus evolved around it because a lot of the places that lack high-speed internet happen to be rural areas in red states with Republican lawmakers. And so that's one area where Republicans have been very willing to spend more money on government services.
Okay, so both sides agree on this, but how is the money actually going to be spent?
So the pot of money is divided roughly two-thirds of it is going to building out the internet infrastructure. It's being channeled through a division of the Commerce Department and then going out to states. And what they did was kick the can down the road on what has been a major sort of business and ideological battle over how to dictate how the money gets spent, meaning a lot of folks in the government, including the White House original proposal, wanted to actually dictate the terms of the kind of technology that had to be used, particularly what they call future-proof technology or fiber optic technology everywhere. Industry has pushed back, saying that that's too rigid, that it sets too high a standard, that it would actually hurt a lot of current existing players who rely on other forms of technology. And so I think that fight of you know, what kind of technology it gets spent on is one that will get played out as the money makes its way through the pipeline. The other third of the money, by the way, is going to affordability, which is a relatively new cause and another new role for the government, which is to say that access to the internet isn't just whether the actual wires have been laid, but whether people can afford to pay that. And so a new form of subsidies to help people, you know, get their internet subscription.
Okay, so another area that President Biden has really pushed for was money to support electric vehicles. How is the bill going to affect EV drivers?
So it is, I think the best way to put it is it's a step toward boosting the spread of electric vehicles. It's not a turning point or as transformative as probably the spending on the broadband will be. He had originally sought $15 billion to create a new network of electric charging stations across the country. It's an infrastructure that is essential in order to allow for a critical mass of electric vehicles to spread, that drivers have to know that there's a place that they can charge and drive long distances. He got $7.5 billion. That should be enough to add a lot more electric vehicle charging stations, but most experts say not nearly enough to create the kind of mass demand that he's looking for.
Are there other parts of the bill that will help boost green infrastructure?
Yeah, no, there's tens of billions of dollars for other things that would, in various forms, be what you'd call green infrastructure, which, as I'm sure you know, is a pretty vague and general term. But, you know, there's money to go to school systems to try and buy electric buses, replace traditional buses with electric buses. There is some $40 billion for something called climate resilience, which is to help communities respond, not just to reduce the odds of climate change, but to actually respond to some of the damaging impacts of what a lot of people attribute to climate change. And so there's a lot like that that's scattered throughout. There's money to help improve the electric grid. And again, I think no one would say that it's a game changer per se, but it certainly is an acknowledgement that green technology is an important part of a modern infrastructure system and will give a jump start to a number of those areas.
What's that going to mean for jobs? Because, you know, often when we're talking about green energy, we're talking about new tech. So are these tech jobs that are going to be created? Are they blue collar jobs? What's going to be created? Because there is so much money going into green energy.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, the Biden administration, I mean, broadly, not just on their environmental policy, has focused on trying to make a claim that they're economic policies aimed at working class and middle class. And a lot of these are going to be construction jobs, sort of building things out, new manufacturing. And so in that sense, the goal is to try and create those kind of jobs. It's an interesting question, too, because traditionally, you know, there's been a trade-off between the environmental movement and the labor movement. And I think a lot of union workers associate environmental policies with a loss of jobs, particularly jobs in traditional energy sectors, whether it's coal or just manufacturing that's associated with pollution. And so part of this is an attempt to try and redefine the political equation and associate environmental policy and green jobs with the creation of good jobs.
You know, Jake, I remember early on in the process, there was a section of the bill that set aside funding for manufacturing semiconductors. Did that make it to the final bill? Because we're still facing a chip shortage.
Right, right. Well, that's hugely important. And in a lot of ways, that may have as much importance to the Biden agenda as this particular infrastructure bill does, because the shortage, of course, is part of what's responsible for rising inflation, which is a new economic concern that wasn't on the horizon when Biden first took office. So there's a separate piece of legislation that also has bipartisan support that spends a lot of money on developing American technology, particularly in competition with China, which does have some $50 billion devoted to semiconductor manufacturing. That bill, the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act, has passed the Senate but has not passed the House and is stalled, partly because of the attention that went to the infrastructure bill, partly because of attention that's gone to this companion Build Back Better bill that is still kind of stuck in Congress. And so the semiconductor thing, which is hugely important and, as you say, is aimed, among other things, at addressing the chip shortage, is stalled right now. And there's not a clear path for it to break free of that that logjam anytime soon.
Were there other tech-related investments that either got left out or maybe got put into this other bill?
So some got converted to the other piece of legislation, sometimes called reconciliation, which is a technical Washington term for how they hope to ultimately pass it. Yeah, so a lot of the climate provisions that Biden had wanted to put into the main legislation got moved to this other one. And that one has something like $500 billion in particular for other forms of green technology, some futuristic things like carbon capture and hydrogen energy. And that, again, is a reduction from what advocates had wanted, what the White House had originally wanted, but also is a big boost from where we are in the status quo.
Okay, so what happens now? I mean, when will this money really start being put into action?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So the some of it goes out the door right away, particularly back on your question of electric vehicles. I think that some of that's like $1 billion that's moving out the door this year in the coming months. The intention of a lot of this was to be spent fairly quickly compared to other programs. So I think it will go out, some of it, soon.
All right. That was our senior Washington correspondent, Jacob Schlesinger. Thanks for joining us, Jake.
Thanks, Zoe.
And that's it for today's tech news briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
20 years ago, energy giant Enron was considered one of the most innovative companies in the world. But in late summer 2001, the company's top executive resigned out of the blue. That set my colleague Rebecca Smith and me on a reporting journey with an end we never imagined. I'm John M. Schweiler from The Wall Street Journal. On our new podcast, Bad Bets, we unravel big business dramas that have had a big impact on our world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.